the racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Great news for Formula One fans this week as the coroner says his findings will not affect the Australian Formula One Grand Prix's future. The coroner investigating the death of the Australian Grand Prix marshal, Graham Beveridge, has indicated that he will not stand in the way of next year's Formula One World Championship season opener in Melbourne to go ahead as planned. Victorian State Coroner Graham Johnson has effectively given the green light for the event organisers to press ahead with its plans. The Albert Park race had appeared on the FIA's 2002 schedule pending the outcome of the inquiry into Marshall Beveridge's death. Alain Prost holds little hope for the survival of his Formula One team, which has debts of almost £20 million. The former world champion has said the chances of his Formula One team staying afloat have been seriously hampered by the terrorist attacks in America on September 11th. Ralph Schumacher's position at Williams could come under some threat if his form does not improve next season. Whilst Toyota this week made their official launch into Formula One, Jonathan Ledyard was there and has this report.
In marked contrast to the previous newcomers, BAR, who talked boldly of winning their first race in 1999, Toyota, the world's third largest car company, are looking forward more modestly, qualifying for every race, finishing as many as possible, and learning as quickly as possible with the stated aims of President Uwe Andersson for their debut season. But he acknowledged the pressure for Japan for success and said the double world championship dream of drivers and constructors' titles were their ultimate goal. Alan McNish, the Jenson Button of his day, said he was proud to be given the chance of his first full Grand Prix drive, more than 10 years after signing as a McLaren test driver. McNish said he was ready to muscle his way through the grid if necessary, and wished the first race in Australia was on January the 1st, not March the 3rd.
Jaguar boss and former world champion Niki Lauda will test the team's new Formula One car 16 years after his last Grand Prix start. Over at Bar, they have found a couple of changes coming with their Grand Prix launch this year. Rally chief David Richards says the sport will not be affected by his move to the British American racing outfit. Jacques Villeneuve has said that he will not leave Bar despite the departure of his mentor and team boss Craig Pollock.
Richards described his return to Formula One as unfinished business. He said his abortive season as Benetton's chief executive 3 years ago had taught him about the key ingredients for Grand Prix success.
Obviously, Jacques is a key element to the team. He's been here from the inception, extraordinarily talented driver. And I had breakfast with him this morning, quite frankly, the first time we've spoken other than passing in the pits over the last couple of years. When a message like this comes, it's a close friend of yours, naturally you react, and as anyone would do with a close friend. I think if we can deliver what we say we're going to deliver, things will change, and Craig's going to return as his manager. So we've had a long discussion about it this morning, and no doubt things will evolve over the coming months.
New three-year deals with Honda and Bridgestone have sweetened his arrival. BAT chairman Ken Clark, the former cabinet minister, said Craig's Pollock's decision to leave had been his, but Jacques Villeneuve's glaring face betrayed that statement. Villeneuve said he hadn't had time to get happy or angry, but he said his former manager's department would be the most difficult of all BAR's upheavals. He said only time would tell whether David Richards' appointment was for the best or worst. Richard said his World Rally interests were in safe hands and that Formula One would now be his primary concern.
It's been tough for 3 years. It's been very tough, and this dream started with many people. There's been changes before, and every change is unsettling for the team and difficult. The team went through it. This one is definitely the most difficult for me to digest anyway. And only time will tell if it's for the best or the worst.
Jacques Villeneuve concluding that report by the BBC's Jonathan Ledyard. The house where Formula One team founder Enzo Ferrari was born has been turned into a museum. This week it was announced in Italy, whilst Michael Schumacher is voted the Sportsman of the Year by the Reuters news agency. Still to come on this week's show, we speak to two young drivers that certainly have a big future. Andrew Cowan will be along to talk drag racing, and Will Davison, of course, the Australian Formula Ford champion, are also coming up. More rallying news now, and Greg Strange from the BBC reports that the Rally of Argentina may be postponed because of the current political situation in the country.
The rally is the only round to take place in South America. It's a traditional part of the World Championship. There were, I understand, concerns raised at last week's World Motorsports Council meeting in Monaco. That, of course, was before the latest violence. The Argentine sporting authorities will need to assure the sport that they can guarantee safety, and David Richards says they need to know quickly. Though the rally doesn't take place till mid-May, tons of equipment and cars need to be shipped to Argentina early in the new year. If Rally Argentina does lose its place in the championship, another event would need to be found. Turkey is rumoured as a possible front-runner.
The Finnish talent Jani Passonen will drive for Mitsubishi alongside Alistair McQuay and Francois Delacour in the Swedish Rally for 2002. Penske Racing president Tim Cedric wants CART and the Indy Racing League to join back together, but he denies that Penske Racing and himself are forcing the issue. Bentley will compete in the Le Mans 24-hour race in 2002, and it's hoped that they will be challenging for victory in the year after. And finally, in British Touring Car news, the British Touring Car champion Jason Plato has left Vauxhall after a series of spats with his teammate Jan Muller, and the European Touring Car Championship, well, it's undergoing another review with new racing points and grid formation changes in the rule book ahead.
While it's quiet on most racetracks at the moment, there's plenty of action still happening in silly seasons in most racing categories, and the V8 supercars is no exception. The silly season for V8s did kick off right after Bathurst in October, and bit by bit the pieces to the jigsaw puzzle are falling into place, with a couple of announcements and some of the rumours further evolving to work out exactly what's happening. And one of those is Stephen Richards, who will be back behind the wheel of a Holden Commodore in the V8 Supercar Series, with the dual Bathurst winner signing to race for the Castrol Perkins Racing Team in 2002. Steve Richards joins team owner and six-time Bathurst 1000 winner Larry Perkins and the 2001 Shell Series runner-up Russell Ingall in the squad. That's right, it looks like they'll be running three cars for 2002. Still at the rumour stage is what will happen with Larry Perkins. All sorts of suggestions that he will be starting to wind down his racing activities, heading towards retirement, but of course he still has plenty of skill and ability, particularly at that big mountain at Bathurst each year in October, which is really his focus. Moving to more of the rumour side of things, so these are really provided for your listening entertainment rather than supposed to be a report of any facts, but some of these rumours continue to evolve, and if the rumours evolve long enough, often they are actually a good reflection of the facts, but at this point some of these things are unconfirmed. Last year, the Prancing Horse Racing had their Bud-sponsored Falcon. It looks as though it won't be running under Prancing Horse next year. That particular car would appear to have been sold to Paragon Motorsport and Cameron McLean. That's a team that had the sponsor hassles with Greenfield Mowers at the Queensland 500 this year. So it remains to be seen what sponsorship arrangements will be on that car. Could it be, perhaps, VIP Pet Foods, who are rumoured to be expanding their sponsorship of V8 supercars, hand-in-hand with their very extensive involvement in other categories. They really are a great supporter of motorsport. So maybe that's one that we'll see on the Greenfield Mowers car again. Keep in mind that VIP Pet Foods and the signage on that car at the Queensland 500 was really one of the initiating factors about some of the hassles with the Greenfield sponsorship and the dispute there. We'll have to watch that one with interest. Another one that continues to evolve is the Briggs Motorsport, the Caterpillar Racing, which is now extending into the Better Electrical. And they had announced that they'd have four cars. It seems to be evolving that they might only have three. And the three drivers that appear most likely are Simon Wills, which was confirmed this year, and what a bit of a surprise is Tony Longhurst has sort of been informally announced, apparently, that he will be a full-time driver for that team. So it's quite surprising that he would be walking away from his fantastic success with Holden Racing Team at Bathurst this year, returning to Ford. But I guess that's the lure of a full-time drive and an up-and-coming team. There was also a lot of talk about what other drivers could fill other spots, including internationals. Pedro Lamy from Formula One, Max Wilson from Kart are all rumoured to have test-driven some of their cars and have been hot shots for that the additional seats. It would appear as though Craig Baird, though, the Kiwi who's had quite a bit of V8 experience, he seems to be the hot rumour to fill that third seat. And the fourth car may be coming on song later this year, later in the season, or even the following year. So that remains to be seen. And we'll continue to watch the fantastic, silly season, very entertaining, from V8 Supercars as more comes to hand.
Well, Australia's fastest racer is back in the country now. Andrew Cowan is getting ready for the new NHRA Powerade Drag Racing Series for 2002. I guess a few changes going on in the United States with Winston giving up their sponsorship of the NHRA, Andrew.
Yeah, well, they had a pretty good relationship with them, you know, for a few amount of years, and now Coca-Cola with Powerade stepped in. But it's going to be pretty good. It'll be better than ever with Coke behind it, and probably really tough over there too.
It's not a bad deal when you can lose a huge cigarette company and pick up a multinational like the Coca-Cola Corporation.
Yeah. Well, like, everyone was a little bit worried for a while because they didn't mention or let anything leak out until the end of the year. But we were all sort of a little bit worried on who was going to step into their place, but I mean, like, you couldn't really ask for anyone better, could you, than Coca-Cola?
No, that's it, exactly. And just for people, Andrew Cowan, you've got an amazing stat sheet. Since we saw you here at Eastern Creek when you made the fastest laps time and fastest license pass.
Yeah, that was the license pass, yeah.
Which was 4.93 back in 1997. Unfortunately, we haven't seen a lot of drag racing at Eastern Creek since then. But certainly you've gone on to bigger and better things, including regularly now running over 300 miles an hour, which must be a great thrill.
Yeah, it's awesome. It just lays you back in the seat all the way down and never really gives up. Our best time to date now, as far as the elapsed time goes, is a 4:58, and the speed is 323 miles an hour. You know, it's just amazing how much you learn over there racing from weekend to weekend. I guess it's like riding a bike, you know, the more you do it, you know, the better you get at it. And we've gone from running 480s at 290 miles an hour in Australia, within 3 years of running 450s at 320 miles an hour in America. So it's just amazing how much you learn over there.
Now, in the 2 years that you've been really concentrating on America, you've set some remarkable achievements. You were the youngest finalist at the US Nationals in 99, and
yep.
In fact, in 2 years of racing, you've made final rounds twice, which is also a fantastic career stat.
Yeah, well, they say third time's a charm, so I guess next time we're in a final, we'll probably take home the gold. But we've been close a few times. We've almost made three finals. We lost in the semi-final to Tony Shaw. It rained there, and it was a peddling match. Both cars were smoking the tyres and everything, and he actually beat us by 0.004 of a second, and that's not much at all, because they say a blink of an eye is 0.004, and 0.004 of a second is just mostly nothing. It's just minute, but we're doing pretty good over there. We've earned a lot of respect with the other teams, with the way that we've been running and performing and everything. So hopefully in 2002 we can win one of the races there.
For people who don't follow drag racing here in Australia or all what's happening in the United States, the Powerade NHRA Drag Racing Series next year will be worth over $50 million US.
Yeah, it's a $15 tour. It's outstanding, isn't it?
23 races at the top level in Australia would be about 5 years.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Yeah, with Powerade in a sport now and everything, it's going to be really explosive. It's going to be excellent. We've got a whole heap of races that are going to be returning racing. There's Corey Mack and Don Lantis and everyone. So it's going to be that's good, because you know, pressure, you're not best. So things should be.
Yeah, sorry, you're starting to break up there a little bit, but what I think is an important thing, over the last couple of years, you've only been doing about 15 races out of the championship, and even this year, having done 15 races, you still managed to finish just outside the top 10.
Yeah, well, like, we missed eight races there. Missed eight races, and we finished 11th in points. We actually got high as 7th at the time when we went to the finals at Vegas this year. So I'm sure if we competed at those eight races, we'd definitely be in the top 10 pretty solidly.
What do the Americans think of a youngster like yourself coming from Australia? They're used to Australians being over there, but probably not used to seeing an Australian running as high.
Australian is breaking up a little bit.
I was just saying, what do the others, what do the Americans think of you? Because they'd be used to seeing Australians, have seen Dave Grubnik and all sorts of other Australians working on cars before. What do they think of a young Australian that's actually running some numbers?
Oh, it's excellent. Like, we just get the fans like it because it's something different, and I'm still the youngest driver out there at the moment, so that's really good for a coverage and everything. And yeah, the fans love it. It's just something different, and it draws a lot of attention, and hopefully more attention to a big corporate sponsor for next year, because that's what we're looking at doing. We want to compete at the whole 23 races next year. We're just talking to some people about the funding and everything, and everything's looking pretty positive at the moment.
If you're running for $50 million, how much does it take to put in a top flight top fuel car?
How much for a year?
Mm.
Well, you know, like, it varies. What you can do it on $1.5 million a year, well, that's American money. And there's some teams out there that won't take less than three. You know, people like John Forster, the amount of money that they get is awesome. But hopefully we get some of it and we can compete at all of them.
Mm. Now, you've been living and working out around the Palmdale area of California, which, of course, is sort of the heartland of where the NHRA has all sprung up from. It obviously means you are doing a lot of travelling, because most of the races are, in the Midwest.
I'm sorry, I'm just out of the car here at the moment because the phone's just breaking up a little bit.
Okay. It does seem like you're basing yourself in California, but most of the races are all in the Midwest of the United States, so how do you manage to transport your whole team around the country?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, we've got, like, we've got the Western Swing and the Eastern Swing, and then there's, like, the Midwest and the South, and we're all over the place.
And what do you do to transport the car to all the races? You've got all the rig and all the get-up?
Yeah. Well, like, we've got a 53-foot Champion trailer with a 2600 truck to tow it. We're actually looking at getting a smaller tag trailer if we're going to compete at all the races next year to cart all of our spare engines, oil, clutch parks, et cetera, around, because, I mean, we're on the road for, like, 3 months at a time, and you can't really, you know, we're based in California, and if you need something from the shop, you can't really drive from Florida over to California overnight, so we're going to have a smaller tag trailer that'll take all of our parts and spare engines and whatnot around.
KN Filters have been a great sponsor for you over the last few years. Will they be supporting you in some way this year?
No, they've actually moved the funny car for next year. But we've had three outstanding years with them, and we're currently talking to some people over there about funding for next year. We've got a guy doing all of our PR work in America and everything, and we've got some people that we're talking to, and hopefully we can pull something off.
It must be amazing coming back here to Australia now and seeing the dramas that you left behind last year and every other time you visited since you made the move to America are still plaguing drag racing here in our country.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, we've run extremely quick and fast over there. Like, we run almost just as good as anyone else, and we've earned a lot of respect over that. And, you know, I'm sure we can ruin some of the big guys' days, because if they're really fit, they've got it won, you know, like, we run just as good as them, so you know, with all sorts of motorsports, you know, like a bit of luck's involved here and there, and with the way that we're performing lately and with a bit of luck, I think we should probably win a couple of races next year.
And since you've been back, of course, you're a Sydney sider, but you have been doing a fair bit of tripping round. Have you had an opportunity to catch up with Jim Reid and see how his new racetrack is moving along?
Yeah, sure. Well, we're really good family friends with the Reeds. They're really good. My parents always go out for, you know, they go out for dinner with him all the time, and he's doing an outstanding job getting this track and everything happening and getting it underway at Sydney. And when we've got the new track in Melbourne and in Sydney, and we've got the new track in Perth as well, it's going to be excellent. Hopefully with the sport gets a sponsor behind it and we've got some money and everything, because I know we wouldn't love anything more to come back and bring the race cars back home one day and race back on our old soil again one day, you know.
How soon till you actually get started in the 2002 season? With 23 races, that's pretty much a race a fortnight right through the 12 months.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've got pre-season testing as well, and it's going to be pretty busy. I mean, like I said, we're on the road for about 3 months at a time before we go back to our shop and restock with our parts and everything, but it just goes so quick over there. I mean, 3 months really felt like it was 2 weeks, because we're always doing stuff, and I mean, it's amazing how much work the car takes. It's a 724 thing. It's just all we do is just work on the car. But that's the reason we're there. We didn't really go for the beer, you know. We've gone to go racing, but your second weekend. There's actually about four or five races there with weekend from weekend, back-to-back races.
Of course, that's one of the toughest things about doing any motor racing series in America, is just the tyranny of distance and the travel all the time, where you are not able to base yourself in any one position.
Yeah, well, that's like another thing that's pretty tough. This year we're lucky enough to stay at the Coletta Racing Team shop, and they're real cool and everything, and they got a really big workshop there in Michigan, and we were lucky enough to stay there for a few races, and we build our stuff, because I mean, like, you're on the road for a few months at a time, and when you if you're in Florida, it's not like you can drive back to LA overnight. It's just good to know people, and it just all boils down to that saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Mm. What's it like, though, to be racing in a division, and like your second final, like it wasn't good enough just to get to Corey McLenathan, you are then racing Kenny Bernstein in your second ever final appearance?
Yeah, it's just so tough over there. I mean, you really got to be on your toes, because I mean, they just run so fast and quick over there. It's unbelievable. We've run almost as quick as them. It's just a dollar difference that we're battling with at the moment, but hopefully that'll be all worked out for next year.
For 2002, you are going to run the whole program, as we've already mentioned. And is there any advantage in being an Australian in the series, or is it still just very hard to get the money without Australian companies supporting you?
Well, I think it's an advantage because it's something different and the fans like it, you know what I mean? You're just not the average Joe Blow. But as far as getting money through Australian companies and stuff, whatever the product that company sells, I mean, it has to be over there and everything. I think the best way to do it is to get an American sponsor and get American dollars to do it, because if you're asking for $1 or $2 million Australian, I mean, you're only getting half of that in American dollars, you know what I mean?
Mm. Of course, you're not the first Australian to be running over there. Of course, Dave Grubnik has been running in the Top Fuelers for quite some time. He hasn't been able to get the sort of success over that long period of time that you've managed to do in such a short time.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've just been lucky enough to be have the race car that I drive and everything. Dad's always had the best stuff and everything, and he's not there for the beers. He's there to go racing and to win some races, and It's just how much you put into it, I guess, you know, as far as the passion for the sport goes and just the ambition, you know.
I think one thing that Australians don't appreciate is just how big drag racing is in the United States. And when you go to even a small town, the racetrack will have stadium seating that fits, you know, 100,000 people in.
Oh, exactly. It's like the first time we went to Chicago and raced there at the Route 66 track. We were pulling up to the racetrack and followed all the signs, and we've seen this big stadium-looking thing. It's like, okay, there's the baseball stadium. Now where's the racetrack? But it was the racetrack. It's just, it's absolutely awesome. I mean, like, the money and everything that goes into it over there is just unbelievable.
What do you think now, looking back on your first 2 years, has been the biggest thing you've learnt?
Well, when we first went over there, bar from my dad, because he's, you know, like, he raced over there in the mid-80s and everything when he was racing his car, the car that he was driving over there in 85 to 87 was, when we all went back over there again in 99, you know, everyone was a little bit starstruck against all the people we were racing. I mean, I'd come home from work or school or whatnot, you know, and put on the NHRA video and watch all my heroes and everything, and it's just a really, really overwhelming feeling when you know, you look over in the lane next to you and you got someone like John Force or Kenny Bernstein in the lane next to you. It's just, it's awesome. I mean, you get to race your heroes, but I'd say one of the biggest things that I learned is to, you know, not worry about the other guy in the other lane and, you know, keep your head on your shoulders and drive your own race, you know.
Being the youngest driver in the championship, it does give you a double-edged sword. You can appeal to the younger people who are starting to pick champions, and you're also probably getting the people who go, yeah, we want to see this young kid do well.
Yeah, well, we've been over there for three seasons now, and the fans and everything are getting, I mean, we're getting more fans each year and everything, and like, we're pretty respected over there now, as far as the other race teams go and the fans go and everything, and it keeps on getting stronger and stronger, you know. Like I said before, being Australian and everything, that you know, that helps, because you're not the average Joe Blow, and being as young as I am, it's pretty cool too, because you know, people look at you and say, oh, how old are you? Because I look very young. It's like, are you 16 or what, you know? Well, that's an advantage too, and hopefully we can use that, you know, to get some, you know, get some bucks off a big company over there one day.
I think the other thing is, well, I haven't been to an NHRA race, but I have been to NASCAR races, and the amazing thing about NASCAR is if there's 43 cars in the race, there's 43 tractor trailers inside the pit area. But then you go outside to the fans area, and there'll be another 43 tractor trailers all selling merchandise. And I suppose that's another way that the team can raise revenue with the merchandising program.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see people like John Force say on the TV all the time. I mean, like, he makes $100,000 in a weekend just off the T-shirt sales. Just the amount of people and everything that support the sport and that buy shirts and everything. I mean, you can make a lot of money out of the apparel side of things, for sure.
And are there collector cars and that sort of thing for Andrew Cowan that people can start grabbing?
Not yet, but in the future there will be. We've been talking to Action, the guys that make all the cars and everything, all the models, and hopefully we'll get something in the near future, you know. Like, we don't want to put something out that, I mean, until we've got, like, a major sponsor and everything and have that big corporate look, you know, we'll take a look at it then.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things that everything hangs on sponsorship, and a lot of these things that John Force is doing now is purely because Castrol expects it.
Yeah, well, you know, he's got Castrol tattooed all over his head. I mean, when people think of John Force, I think of Castrol straight away, just the same as when you think of Victor Bray, you think of Castrol. He's a figurehead for Castrol now, because they've, you know, been with him for so long. and hopefully we can be a figurehead for a big company over there one day too, just like he is.
Your immediate goal is to, of course, pick up your first championship round win, but I would imagine that you also say, I'm finishing just outside of the top 10, not doing the whole season. Getting into the top 5 in the championship and then eventually winning the championship is certainly not beyond you at this stage.
Well, I mean, I'm only 20 years old, so I'm fresh out of my nappy. So, I mean, I've got a good 30 years of racing left in me, and I'm sure we're going to win a few races in the years I get left in me, you know, because I'm still a kid. But it's just when it's going to happen. I mean, we're all really anxious, and the team that we've got, we've also got the youngest team on the NHRA Tour as well. I think the average age on the team's 27 or something, so we're all a bunch of young guys out there doing it with a passion. And, like, it will happen. It's just a matter of when, and hopefully it's soon.
Well, a lot of people would say that probably just being out of nappies isn't the best thing when you get thrown back in the seat like you do. They probably come in handy. But, Andrew Cowan, thanks very much for your time. It is a pleasure to catch up with you and have a safe trip back to the pre-season training, which starts very early in the new year.
Okay, well, thank you, and thanks for all the support.
Well, it's been a pretty tough year in NASCAR, starting the year, of course, at Daytona in tragedy. And NASCAR, the organisers, are starting to get some of their safety requirements in place ready for next season. And some of the changes that they've made starts off with setting an age requirement of 18 years of age for participants in its major series. So again, trying to boost some of their safety measures. So beginning in 2002, all drivers, crew members and other participants in the Busch Series, Craftsman Truck Series and all NASCAR Touring Series must be 18 or older in order to compete. The age requirement matches the existing standard for their primary series, the Winston Cup Series. The age requirement will immediately affect drivers like 16-year-old Kyle Busch, a younger brother of Winston Cup driver Kurt Busch. Kyle was scheduled to run a full truck season next year for Roush Racing, but he will not be allowed to compete under these new rules. Roush, who also owns Kurt Busch's Cup car, Winston Cup car that is, plans to keep Kyle under contract and wait out those 2 years until he is old enough. Now, Kyle's age came up in November when sponsor Marlboro prevented him from racing in a Craftsman truck race. The objection from Marlboro was based on an interpretation of the agreement between big tobacco companies and the state attorneys in the US that precludes the involvement of people under 18 in events sponsored by cigarette companies. So, drivers like 21-year-old Casey Atwood in future will be less likely to break into Winston Cup until much later in their careers. If you look at Atwood's case, he was 17 and had become the youngest pole winner in Busch history when he caught Ray Evenham's eye in 1998. Evenham had Atwood continue to hone his skills in the Busch series, then hired him to drive one of the Winston Cup cars this year. But under these new requirements, drivers like Atwood will be relegated to the low-level NASCAR Weekly Racing Series, likely pushing back by years the time that they will be ready for Winston Cup. Other rule changes passed this week in NASCAR include the requirement of helmets and fire suits to be worn by over-the-wall pit crew members, and a mandate that any crew member involved in fueling the car, including carrying fuel from deeper in the pits up to the pit wall, must wear a full-face helmet and a fire-resistant headsock, or balaclava in our language, I guess. And for the first time ever, the rule books will require drivers to wear a fire suit. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Before now, NASCAR had only recommended that a driver wear fire-resistant clothing, but there was nothing in the rule book that actually prevented a driver from climbing into the car and racing wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Luckily, most drivers have heeded that recommendation in the past. Also, a rule requirement will be that seat belts and harnesses will be required to be fitted in accordance with the manufacturer's requirements. Another reference back to the Dale Earnhardt tragedy at Daytona at the beginning of the year. Also, in Winston Cup news, we've got a few movements, this time in terms of crew chiefs. Dale Jarrett's team joined Rusty Wallace's in making crew chief changes, which have been possibly a reaction to disappointing seasons. Both drivers were expected to compete for the Winston Cup Championship this season, but Jarrett finished fifth in the standings and Wallace was seventh. Todd Perreault, who won the championship with Jarrett in 1999, said on Thursday he was giving up his crew chief duties and would become a team manager of the number 88 Ford at Robert Yates Racing. Jimmy Eldridge, formerly crew chief of Bobby Hamilton, will replace him. Eldridge won his first race this year with Hamilton when they won at Talladega Speedway in April. The move comes one day after Wallace split with long-time crew chief Robin Pemberton, ending the longest active driver-crew chief partnership in the Winston Cup Series at 230 races. That's a long time to be together. You'd imagine that they build quite a bit of chemistry and maybe a telepathy there to work out as a pretty big team. So that's going to be a bit of a setback for Wallace, but he's got Bill Wilburn who will fill in that role. Pemberton cited a desire to spend more time with his family for leaving the Penske Racing team, and he was quoted as saying that he's been on the road for 22 straight years and he's ready for a change. He's looking forward to staying in the sport, but more in a position where he could be in the workshop most of the time and not a road warrior anymore. And we have to keep in mind that NASCAR have a very grueling schedule of over 30 races in a year, which is really has these guys on the road full time. You can compare that to V8 supercars where they have 13, 14 outings in a year. It's much easier in categories like that to have a role in the workshop, and it's still not too onerous to be at the racetracks and do all of that travelling. NASCAR would appear to be much tougher in that regard. Also in NASCAR, came across a few little snippets of statistics. The Americans, of course, being very big on their statistics and quoting all these types of things. And NASCAR also being such a family type of community, it's also very interesting. We've got one of their teams, which is Don Levy Racing, been in the sport for 52 years, would you believe? Now, Don Levy has been involved every aspect of stock car racing since 1949 with 852 starts. His role as a team owner rather than a driver, that is. 852 starts in 829 NASCAR Winston Cup Series races. And as a result of all of that, he's a fan favourite and quite a NASCAR icon. In 1998, the man responsible for all of this is Junie Don Levy. He received the STP Richard Petty Achievement Award, and in 1999 was the recipient of the NMPA Mayer's Brothers Award and the Ford Motorsport Company Spirit of Ford Award, Ford's highest motorsports honour. What makes this even more fascinating is that from the 852 starts, never won a race. It's sort of hanging in there quite a long time. It'd be interesting, it would be great to see them win a race. Mind you, they are sort of middle of the pack team and really don't have that same level of resources as some of the front running teams. But that's quite a career in the sport. Well done to them.
Last week I had the opportunity to catch up with Australian Formula Ford champion Will Davison. He got off to a flyer at the Australian Formula One Grand Prix and never looked back.
Yes, yeah, certainly we started the year with a brand new 2001 Van Diemen. We got it this time last year, so it left us plenty of time to do the testing and gain knowledge from the car and try and get it up to scratch. You know, come the Grand Prix, we didn't quite know where we were compared to the rest of the opposition, and it surprised us and I think a lot of other people, how quick it was. And it put us in good stead for the first round at Phillip Island after Albert Park, and we were confident that we'd have the package to wrap up the championship. But Will Power, he was, from race one, round one, knocking on my heels all the way.
It was an interesting championship this year, in as much as you seem to have some real advantages, particularly down in Victoria, which is of course your home state where your background is. But when you got closer to further away from Victoria, it was harder and harder to get your handle on the car.
Yes and no. I mean, the only real Victorian race was Calder Park, and we did have a slight advantage on Will there. But we did testing on most of the circuits beforehand. We went there the week before and did a day, not ridiculous amounts, but we did a few days, Phillip Island before the first round, and we went to each circuit sort of the week before, and You know, most circuits we were pretty good. Where we struggled most, I'd say, was Eastern Creek. Will won both races there. I was second, but after that, you know, we really pulled our fingers out, and we knew we had to get the upper hand in the championship. And when we went to Perth for the third round, we won both races, and I think after Perth, we really had the upper hand on Will for the remaining rounds of the championship.
For yourself now, you've won Formula Ford. They won't have you back. What's your next move?
Well, I've got ambitions of really trying to make it overseas. You know, I've got dreams of being a Formula One world champion, and although, you know, chances are slim, we're going to go and give it my best shot. I feel we've got quite good backing behind me. I've just been over in England for the last month competing at the Formula Ford Festival at Brands Hatch, and it was a real eye-opener. I learnt a lot. We ended up crashing out in the semi-final, which was a shame, but, you know, I soaked in whatever I could, and we also had the opportunity to test a Formula Renault in Germany, which went extremely well, and, you know, that's certainly made me hungry for more, and very fortunate enough to be running in the British Formula Renault Championship next year, either with Manor, which won the 2000 Formula Renault Championship with Kimi Räikkönen, or a team Motor World, which won this year, so we know we're going to have the equipment. And just hopefully, you know, I'm up to it next year.
Obviously, you want to stay in open wheels to go to Formula One, but Alex has shown that you can make a living racing tin tops over in Europe as well.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Alex always had dreams to stay in open wheels, but the opportunities just weren't there for him. And he was very, very fortunate to get an opportunity through Porsche Cars Australia to compete in Germany for the last 2 years. And it looks like he'll be doing that again next year. In the Porsche Carrera Cup, and looks like next year he's also trying to put a deal together to run in the Super Cup, which run with the European Formula One races. And, you know, he's making good earning for himself, and he's learning a lot. And, you know, if things go well for him next year, he's, you know, really knocking on the door of hopefully a DTM career or something like that. If things don't go well, I think, you know, he could come back to Australia and hopefully use his knowledge in a V8 career.
Of course, that's the fallback position. You can go and ride in those dud V8s.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think it's great that the V8 championship is so big in Australia at the moment. It's a good feeling to know that it's a good fallback position. And, you know, I did have a few opportunities to maybe run a V8 next year, which were hard to turn down. But I think while I'm young and I've got this opportunity, I'd be silly to waste it. And hopefully I can make it in the big time over there. If not, come back to Australia and, you know, enjoy a successful career here.
For 2002, when do you actually head over to and start doing the testing? And of course, that is a big learning curve, because the tracks in Europe are completely different to our tracks here in Australia.
Well, we don't have anything confirmed yet, but it is looking 99%. It looks like we'd probably be heading over in early February to do a few days in Spain, early February, and then the official Formula Renault test days start in late February. And then the first round's not till late March, so you know, we're giving myself plenty of time to prepare on the living and on the cars, and I don't have too many expectations yet of what results I can achieve next year, but I'd like to think I could, you know, win a few races come the middle of the year and learn all the circuits, and then put together an assault, you know, on Formula 3 in Britain for hopefully the 2 years, 2003-2004.
Well, Will, all the best. Have a good Christmas, and we look forward to seeing your results as they come back from across the pond.
Thank you very much.
Well, the corporate shenanigans continue over at CART. Now, as part of their efforts to raise their profile amongst fans, well, that's the reason they're giving at least, Championship Auto Racing Teams, also known as CART, hired Christopher Pook on Wednesday as President and Chief Executive Officer. Pook, the founder of the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, California, replaces President and CEO Joseph Heitzler, who will remain as Chairman, however. Now, CART, of course, have been in all sorts of strife over cancelled races throughout the season, also tracks that really weren't ready, seepage of water in some of their new international tracks, and corporate shenanigans in terms of minority shareholders making allegations about conflicts of interest and all types of stuff like that. So it really is a tough time for CART, also on the tracks, in the boardrooms, and also in terms of trying to draw a crowd. Now, CART was formed in 1978 by a group of dissident US Auto Club car owners, and they were intent of being in control of their own series. Unfortunately, since then, the leadership of CART has changed many times. Each of its presidents, chairmen, and CEOs face this problem of dealing with a board of directors made up of the very people trying to win races and championships, and they also had their fingers into the promoting pie as well. So those conflicts of interest, it really seems to be an inherent problem in the organisation that they've got, and that really did lead to some of these recent changes. So it'll be interesting to see whether Christopher Poot can really lead CART out of the wilderness that it's in. He's been very successful in that Long Beach race, so he does seem to have the right focus on, you know, raising profile and being a successful promoter of the series, in addition to being a promoter of a particular race. Talking about particular races, they also had some announcements about future racetracks and things like that. Dover Downs and CART announced that in addition to plans for a new Grand Prix in Denver, the companies have a letter of intent for a Grand Prix in St. Petersburg, Florida, and are in discussions about races in Nashville and St. Louis. This seems to be quite a contrast to some of their international growth plans, and maybe it's an attempt to try to re-establish a real proper foundation in the US, because that's the area that they've quite struggled in the past. CART awarded Dover Downs a preferred promoter status for the next 3 years to pursue CART-sanctioned street events in several metropolitan areas. The CART 2002 schedule released last month did not include the Detroit Grand Prix, the race that was started in 1982 in downtown Detroit and moved to Belle Isle in 1992. That's another one of the sort of changes, and that's a race that has been vulnerable for quite a few years, so it's not particularly surprising, although maybe a bit disappointing to see that race disappear from their schedule. Also in the US, and some of the movements and race developments, is Indy Racing League, who are thinking about taking the IRL series to Daytona Speedway. That'll be quite an interesting one. Very high speeds there, of course, in being such a large oval, and that would really reinforce some of the heritage, would reinforce IRL as being the speedway, the oval speedway champions in the US, and further push CART out. And also suggested that the IRL may be looking at racing on a street circuit, following the NASCAR model of having a predominantly oval series, but having up to two races each year on a proper street, on a proper road circuit, not a street circuit through a city, but a road circuit at a full-time circuit. So we'll watch that one with interest. It'll be a very different change in their culture, having to turn left and right rather than just going round and round in circles. Also in the IRL, something that was quite surprising to me, because it seemed to be one of their trump cards with IRL gaining that upper hand over CART, was that two-time Indianapolis 500 champion Al Unser Jr. is without a ride for the upcoming IRL season, which is scheduled to start March 2nd at Miami Homestead Speedway. Now, there's quite a lot of fuss made when Unser did defect from CART over to IRL, and that was seen as being a major draw card to the season. But the 38-year-old second-generation driver from Albuquerque, New Mexico, who joined the IRL in 2000 and has been part of Galley's Racing, since then, Unser has competed in 22 IRL races and scored 2 wins. So it seems as though he's been reasonably successful. But sponsor woes have put that team on a hiatus, and Unser was given permission to contact other IRL teams about driving possibilities. So we'll watch with interest to see whether he can score a full-time drive for 2002. Not only do we focus on a lot of aspects of motor racing that would fit better in the business pages and maybe the court reports, but now we're going to have a shot at the social pages as well. And over in Scotland, celebrities began arriving on Monday for the wedding of Hollywood actress Ashley Judd and Scottish racing driver Dario Franchitti, who competes in the CART series. The local registrar in this Scottish town has confirmed that a wedding will be held on Wednesday, so I guess it's already happened by now, but no venue had been announced. News reports said the couple will marry at Sikibo Castle in Doornock, Sorry if my Scottish pronunciations aren't too good there. This is the lavish venue chosen by pop star Madonna and film producer Guy Ritchie when they tied a knot a year ago, and it's known for very strict security. News reports said guests would include Michael Douglas and his wife Catherine Zeta-Jones, actress Sandra Bullock, Gwyneth Paltrow, and racing drivers David Coulthard, Colin McRae, Scottish theme there, isn't there? Robert Trump, brother of New York tycoon Donald Trump, and it really will be quite a social event, that one. Judd and Franchitti had originally posted their barns, or notice of intent to marry, at the town of Boonar Bridge on January 31, but moved the date forward and changed the location, reportedly so they could marry at this particular famous castle. So a few broken hearts out there, I think, particularly the fellows who have an eye for Ashley Judd, who does some fantastic work in the movies.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.